Welcome to the market sponsored by CME Group, Dateline Chicago, Friday, April 11th. Yes, we're finally back home after going coast to coast over the past couple of weeks from Washington, D.C. and National Ag Day in March all the way to Arizona. And then this past week from Arizona to Chicago and to Jacksonville, Florida, for the annual convention of the National Agri-Marketing Association. But the travels at least did find better weather, certainly in Arizona and in Florida, and even in Chicago on this 11th day of April. Our temperature is the warmest it's been since last October. So the markets have been very warm, too, but in the wrong direction. Boy, if you look at the summary for this week, it is not a pretty story. We have watched the markets in commodities and the markets in the Wall Street activity move lower. And today, U.S. stocks dropped in a volatile session after Thursday's sharp sell-off. The Nasdaq today closed below the 4,000 mark for the first time since early February. And for the week, the S&P 500 fell 2.6%, the Nasdaq lost 3.1%, and the biggest weekly decline for both indexes since June of 2012, with the Nasdaq composite falling through 4,000 for the first time since early February. And it was a very volatile trading week, at least toward the end of the week, on Wall Street. In the agricultural world, the old-time floor traders finally had a job for about 15 minutes this week when Globex went down on the close on Tuesday afternoon. With about 15 minutes of trading time left, the Globex situation simply stopped working. And people rushed to the trading pits again to do the open outcry and the arm waving and all of that. So at least for 15 minutes, we know that the open outcry trading still has some value, because that breakdown came the afternoon before the April crop report due out Wednesday morning. And traders were frantic to get those orders placed before the market closed. And some of them had never traded in the pits before, so they had to look at some of the veteran traders for help there. But as we ended the week, the March or the May wheat contract, $6.59 a bushel. May corn dropped below $5 again to $4.98, and May soybeans ended the day down 19¼ cents today, $14.64.5 to end the week's trade. The June hog contract at the Mercantile Exchange, that's the active one now, ended the week at $121.15 a hundredweight. That was unchanged for this trading day. And June cattle ended the week at $136.10. That was a gain of 90 cents for the last trading day of the week. Well, both Max Armstrong and I spent time in Jacksonville, Florida, with the ag marketing and advertising and media community. This is our group in the agricultural business that gets together once a year. Max and I donned our tuxedos and co-hosted the awards program that took place on Wednesday night. Max won a national award. And there was a contest for the best app for your computer. And those of you that have seen his tractor app, well, he won the national award for that one. But there was a lot more going on as well. So right now, let's say hello to Max Armstrong.
Thanks, Orion. Good morning. What a great time we had in Jacksonville, Florida there with the members of the National Agri-Marketing Association. And yes, they do present a lot of awards, all right, as you and I had a front row seat for that. But one of the awards that they presented that on Thursday, after our awards program Wednesday night, was for Agribusiness Leader of the Year. And they presented that award to Sonny Beck, who is the president of Beck's Hybrids, an Indiana-based seed company, family-owned seed company, the sixth largest seed company in the United States. I talked with Sonny Beck about the honor.
Yeah, well, Max, this is really great. I mean, it's a team award. I was really surprised by it, but it's an award you don't get being a golf player. I mean, this is a basketball team or a soccer award, so it's really an award for our team because of how they play well with each other, understand each other's abilities, to go to the common goal of really taking care of our customer. If they take care of him right, then he just naturally takes care of our company. So it's about that whole philosophy, and we appreciate, but also humbled by the award.
The customer that you refer to, you talk about that farmer being really your shareholder.
Exactly. When a family-owned company, that farmer, that customer, is the person that feeds money into our company, and so we nicely call them our shareholder because we want to take care of them first. Just like in a public company, you have to take care of your shareholders first. So we take care of that customer first. It just comes very natural for us to do that.
Your company has a long heritage. You talked about this. Father, grandfather, this is a company that started, what, more than seven decades ago?
Yeah, 77 years ago, 1937, my father and grandfather started the company with the first 6 acres of hybrid seed corn.
Your son came back with you after college. That really has kind of changed the landscape for the business, hasn't it?
It has changed. He came back in 1987, was our number 12 employee, and shortly after that we decided we did need to expand. We needed, if we were going to be significant and be able to attract the new technologies, we needed to change the way we were doing things, and because not all brands would survive in capitalism when an industry starts to narrow down to the five or six brands that usually survive. And so so we had to change our way from and adopt this theory of taking care of your customer first. Whatever that takes, we'll take care of him first. By the way, he'll probably take care of us in the end.
You also seem to be pursuing a path of forming some allegiances, some alliances, if you will, working with others in the industry.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's part of the goal, too, was to provide choices, to provide a grocery store concept. So the person comes in and they wanted to buy cornflakes. We had Post and we had Nabisco. Well, we have different kinds of corn borer control, three different kinds of corn borer control, two different kinds of glyphosate control, Liberty control, whatever they might want. We would have that in our store so that we're very unbiased in our recommendations then, because we don't have to push one over the other. We can do an honest job through our practical farm research, which we have really expanded over the years to doing more than 100 tests every year now in five different locations, just testing things for the benefit of the farmer. I mean, the universities used to have the money to do this sort of thing, but they don't now. And so we've expanded that, and farmers really appreciate getting this free information. And we publish it on the website. You don't have to be a customer to get it. Of all different kinds of things, like what population should you be planting? How early should you plant corn? How much will it cost you if we plant late this year? We got all kinds of studies on all those kinds of things.
The landscape is so dramatically changing. One thing that occurs to me is this is kind of a landmark year for you personally in your career, because you walked out of college 50 years ago this year?
I guess that's probably about right. That's exactly right. Yes, walked out of college, Purdue, 1964. Absolutely.
The technology?
It's a very rapid. I'm very embracing for all the new stuff and really always want to be on the forefront of change, but boy, has it changed. I mean, when they say that knowledge doubled from the year 1900 to 1940, and then again from 1940 to 1956, and now it's doubling every couple of years just because of the smartphone I got in my pocket and everything else, that we can get so many things so fast. If you just think about what the future is going to be, my dad saw horses to planes, the man on the moon. And you think what the kids will now see, because when knowledge doubles so fast, people who make decisions so much earlier in their life, they get smart so much earlier in their life, and they live longer and can make decisions longer. I mean, it's hard to fathom what those changes will be. But almost if you can dream it, they can probably do it.
The farmers you serve are changing too, aren't they?
Oh,
this is the nature of the operation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Some are growing, some are staying the same. But a large amount of them are trying to put on more acres, trying to farm a few more acres, because the equipment's so large, they can do it. And so that has created problems for them in that HR issues, human resource issues. And they hire someone and they don't have the farm work ethic. Like, well, it's 8 to 5, it's time to quit. No, not on the farm you don't. You may get tomorrow off, it's raining. But and so they're having issues like that. I understand why people don't work like they do. And so we're trying to help them with that because we have an HR department, and we help farmers with those kinds of things, with other things they might have questions about as they grow, financial issues, how they're going to bring other members into the family farm, and those kind of things. And so it's really about helping your customer solve the problems that he has that day, and he'll take care of you in the long run.
I want to come back to that team approach. You and I started this conversation, as you shared a little bit earlier, how much that team matters right there at Bex Hybrids. You had some of the team members stand up, and it occurred to me that there wasn't much snow on the mountain there. They didn't look like Sonny Beck or Max Armstrong. How do you get good people and keep them where they really understand what it's all about at Bex Hybrids?
Well, I think it's they're excited about the goals that we have and the brand that we have and how we try to take care of customers. And then it's coming down to them and treating them like they want to be treated. Because they want to text you. They don't necessarily want to talk on the phone. Now, that's not you and me. I want to talk on the phone. But I understand. I'm going to text them because that's what they want to do. You meet them where they are, and that's what the next generation may be, will be, as farmers too. And so we need all types in our company to relate to all types of farmers that are there. And so building that team and helping everyone understand what the culture of Bex is what's so important. And we do not need all 7-foot basketball players on our team, nor do we need all 6-foot point guards. We need a combination of all, and that we people are willing to play together and play well together, because not everybody's going to be a shooting guard. We want people that are just really thrilled to help other people in the company.
Obviously, as you serve producers, you've got to deliver. You've got to have the product. You have to have the service. But do you think also some of your customers, just knowing what I know about the way you operate, also appreciate the corporate culture, the family culture, the personal interaction and relationships that you folks at your company seem to elevate?
Well, very, very much so. You know, we're proud to say it. You know, the leadership team, my son and I and all of our leadership team, you know, we're family-owned. We're independent. We honor Christian values, and we plan to help our customer. I mean, it's just very open, and we can say that because we're family owned and we're independent. And so it's a great way to do business. I mean, you can do exactly what you want to do.
Sonny Beck, Bex Hybrids in Indiana. He was honored as the Agribusiness Leader of the Year by the National Agri-Marketing Association. Hey, while we're on the subject of Indiana, before I wrap up this morning, Orion, a friend of mine who is the county sheriff down in Gibson County, Indiana, was telling me about this. 80 years ago this weekend, a Chicago policeman was killed on patrol as he interrupted a store robbery in progress. Patrolman John Officer, Officer, was shot in the chest as two of the five robbers opened fire. The bad guys were arrested within a week, and the two killers were executed just 6 months later. Well, Patrolman Officer was buried some 250 miles away from Chicago in a country cemetery near his hometown of Princeton, Indiana. There's a cemetery on Sand Hill there, about midway between Princeton, Indiana and Mount Carmel, Illinois. And this weekend, lawmen from around Princeton and some from here in Chicago will go out to Patrolman John Officer's grave, and with a 21-gun salute and the playing of taps, they'll pay a proper final tribute to his service and to his death in the line of duty 8 decades ago here in Chicago. Orion?
Thank you, Max, for that interesting, heart-tugging story there at the end of your report. Don't go too far away because I want you to talk markets with Brian Basting when we continue on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Brian Basting, Advanced Trading, Bloomington, Illinois. We rely on you every now and then to get us an update of how this world of the markets ought to appear to the producers and how maybe they should adapt to it.
We're not planting anything to speak of right now in these early days of April. Some growers would like to get going as early as the month of March in our part of the country. Should we worry about it yet?
Well, we'd like to certainly make some progress here in April, Max, but I think as long as we can get into the last part of the month here and get started, we'll be in good shape. The lesson we learned from 2013 is these days, producers with the size of the equipment they have, they can make a lot of progress in a short period of time. I think last year, that Mother's Day weekend, producers started, and nationwide, the corn planting progress went from 28% to 71% in just 1 week. So we certainly would like to make some progress here in April. We don't want to mud the crop in, though, so I think producers will be patient for a little while longer yet.
When you mud it in, you get compaction, and of course, growers know the effect that can have on yield ultimately. Can get you off to a bad start.
Yeah, the stand is everything in corn. If you plant that 36,000 plants, you'd certainly like to see as many of them as possible come up. So I think producers are going to remain patient here. I think as you get into May, start to watch the weather really closely, but hopefully we can make a good start here in April.
As is often the case across the Corn Belt, soil moisture conditions vary. I have a friend who is a captain of a volunteer fire department in eastern Nebraska, and I've noticed the postings in recent weeks. They have been on the run with field fires out there, brush fires. There are no burn advisories that have been put up in that part of the world. They're very dry, aren't they?
Yeah, the further you go west, the worse it gets. We work with customers, as you mentioned, in Nebraska and into Kansas especially. You get into that southwest corner of Kansas, Oklahoma Panhandle, Texas Panhandle, exceptionally dry there. Those folks would certainly welcome a rain for the wheat crop coming on this spring and, of course, to get ready for the spring planting of corn and beans, too, and milo. But, I think that as you go east to west, it definitely gets drier across the Midwest into the central and southern plains.
You mentioned Texas. I assume corn has been planted and it's up and growing down there.
Yeah, the far south Texas, they always like to get started in February, which is great to see. I think as we move further north here, it takes a little longer for folks to get started. But they'll start in south Texas in the end of February.
We're going to plant a lot of corn this year?
I think we're going to plant a little more than what the USDA said at the end of March, weather permitting. I think when you look at the acreage breakdown the USDA provided, I think the USDA has 91.7 million acres of corn. I think that number, again, weather permitting, could edge up maybe as much as a million acres. We'll find out in the June acreage report, but I think we are set to plant a record amount of beans, and I think we may edge up that corn number a little bit.
The soybean market is poised to wind up with bountiful supplies eventually. I mean, we're looking at an unbelievably tight carryout here before the new crop comes in this fall. It's just basically pipeline supplies, isn't it, Brian?
That's an exceptionally strong point to make, Max, because we've got apples to oranges when you look at the old crop soybean carryout being historically tight, as you mentioned. Talk of imports this summer just to get us to new crop. But South America, as we speak, is harvesting the largest bean crop ever in Brazil and Argentina. And U.S. producers are set to plant the most beans ever here in the U.S. The 14-15 bean balance sheet could look very burdensome compared to what it is today. And it's been several years, but single-digit bean prices aren't out of the question. Not a price prediction, but a price possibility, certainly for 14-15.
So as we look at late summer of 2015, before that crop comes in, I mean, we could have some big supplies of soybeans.
Very big supplies. I think that the South American crop, as I mentioned, that they're harvesting now, and the U.S. crop will harvest this fall, could put us in a position we could see the carryout for 14-15 perhaps triple from where it is today in the U.S. So when you look at the summer of 15, yes, we could be looking at much lower bean prices. Bean prices today pushing $15 could be a lot lower than that next year.
Looking on down the road, let's say we do have a huge supply of beans in the world and it backs off the price, as you would expect. How much will South America then curtail its production? They won't back off much, will they?
I don't think so. I think when you look at those areas of northeast Brazil, for example, that have expanded the last few years, there's still room for growth there. Those folks are still making profit growing beans down there. The fall of 15 might look different, but I think the fall of 14, I don't think you're going to see a big pullback in plantings this fall, which will be the crop they harvest next spring. The fall of 15 may look different at that point, but I think for the short term, I don't see a big pullback in acreage down in South America.
So they could continue to very much respond to the market, and if there are bountiful supplies, they would withdraw acres, you're saying?
Yeah, I think the old adage, high prices curing high prices, I think the market is working on doing that now by encouraging more acreage last fall in South America, encouraging U.S. producers to grow beans this spring. But in the long term, yes, I think they could back off if you start to see the bean prices, for example, drop down to that single-digit level.
Back during that time a couple of years ago when prices were so strong and we were looking at a very robust corn market, many of us were talking about a new plateau and the possibility we had reached a new plateau in the commodity markets. Can it be said that really we have to some extent? And if you look at the global demand for these crops and how much the world is absorbing, it is a different picture, isn't it?
It is a different picture. I think when you look at it, as you mentioned, the tremendous demand we're seeing worldwide. What I'd caution your folks, your listeners to think about, though, is that not only are we looking at a new plateau, if you will, in prices for the crops they receive, you're looking at a new plateau in costs for the costs that they're incurring, whether it be the cash rent that they're paying, fertilizer, seed, whatever. So in terms of looking at it as a margin business, I think the producers right now are looking at margins, for example, in 14-15 being tighter than they've experienced the last couple of years, and that really demands that they use risk management more aggressively maybe than they have the last couple
of
years.
Crop insurance still very much alive and well, and coupled with, of course, shrewd marketing.
Crop insurance is a strong foundation for any marketing program. We're looking at base prices, though, for 2014 being significantly lower than what they were in 2013. Having said that, though, we've seen a nice rally. December corn futures back above $5 a bushel. November new crop soybean futures approaching 12. Some good opportunities to start with a program for new crop.
What is at work in this corn market? I mean, when you had a lot of people talking about corn below $4 a bushel and we're up over 5, what's going on here?
As high prices cured high prices for corn by discouraging usage and encouraging production, we're seeing low prices for corn at least start to heal or slow down the drop in prices by curing low prices. That is, discouraging foreign production, discouraging U.S. producers. We're not going to plant as much corn in 14 as you did in 13 and 12. And we're seeing usage recover, too. We're seeing ethanol plants with healthy margins. We're seeing exports of corn bounce back. So lower prices do have an upside from a producer standpoint in encouraging usage and at least discouraging foreign production.
I visited an ethanol plant a couple of weeks ago at Cadiz, Kentucky, and yeah, we went through and we saw all of the plumbing, you know, all of the sophisticated piping, and it's quite a refinery there. Then we went over to this big, huge Quonset, and there was the distiller's grains piled in there, and they load it out of the rail cars, and they ship it to the livestock industry. That stuff's valuable, isn't it?
It is. Not only domestically, as you mentioned, shipping to the livestock folks, they're becoming more comfortable using those DDGs. Overseas demand has also perked up for DDGs. We're seeing DDGs exports continue to surge, and that's also supporting the ethanol industry.
It's really made a difference, hasn't it?
It has, and those margins are very attractive for those folks right now.
How much angst is there over that coming EPA decision? Whenever it comes, is the industry going to just take this in stride and say, hey, you know, we've built this demand. We've got a market anyway for ethanol. What they do in Washington isn't really going to make much difference. Or will it have at least a psychological effect on prices?
At this point, I think you really painted the scenario that the industry is looking at today. In terms of the profitability being there, they are taking that in stride. Where it may affect is if you start to see the margins deteriorate, start to see those margins get down to break-even levels, which we did see back in 2012, for example, then you look at the impacts of the mandate. But for the time being, ethanol production is strong, 10 to 15% above last year. I think as long as those margins stay strong, those folks are going to continue to move forward and produce.
Brian, always good to talk to you. Thank you for coming in for a few minutes to sit down with us and to set us straight.
Always good to be with you, Max.
Brian Basting, Bloomington, Illinois. The name of the company is Advance Trading.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Whenever farmers and ranchers get together these days, whether it's an ag meeting, an ag convention, the country elevator, or the coffee shop, sooner or later they get around to talking about farmland values. And past several days, the folks in Iowa came out with a survey of farmland values in that top corn soybean producing state. And according to the Iowa Realtors Land Institute survey, Farmland values in Iowa fell 5.4% over the past 6 months, under pressure from lower grain prices. But Kyle Hansen, past president of the Institute and a broker with Hertz Real Estate in Iowa, said the report overall was encouraging because we knew the price of corn had fallen off 35% since this time last year. So 5.4% in the last 6 months, not too bad. The average selling price of farmland across Iowa in March was $8,286 an acre. That compares with $8,758 an acre 6 months before, and prices compared to a year ago, down 4.6% from the year-ago price of $8,690. The value of farmland in Iowa fell in all nine crop reporting districts, according to the survey. The biggest drop came in southeastern Iowa. Values there down 8.4% in the past 6 months. The Southwest had the smallest decline at 2.1%, and northwestern Iowa farmland had the highest average price at $12,930 an acre. So the value of farmland certainly has not matched the decline that we have seen so far in the corn price. Although talking to some traders, quite a few of the traders are surprised that we're holding around $5 a bushel in corn. But as Brian Basting said, the cure for low prices is lower prices, and the cure for high prices is higher prices. And apparently that's what happened in the corn market. With prices moving lower, buying moved into the market. We're beginning to get more facts and statistics from the Ag Census of 2012, and some of the numbers that we have focused on are indeed interesting, and I thought I might share them with you in our time remaining today. First of all, looking at state data from the 2012 Ag Census, 34 states saw decreases in the number of farms since the last previous census of 2007. 16 states saw an increase in the number of farms, and most of the states seeing that increase were west of the Mississippi. In addition, Alaska, Florida, and the far northeast also fell in that category. The amount of land in farms decreased in 31 states. And in 25 states, both the number of farms and the amount of land in farms went down. In 10 states, both went up. How many farms are there, according to the census of 2012? 2,100,000. That's down 4.3% from the last census in 2007. And in those 5 years, the amount of land in farms in the U.S. declined from 922 million acres to 915 million. That decline of less than 1% was the third smallest decline between census since 1950. In 2012, the average farm size in the United States was 434 acres. That was a 3.8% increase over 2007, when the average size farm was 418 acres. The state with the highest number of farms, well, Texas ranked number one, followed by Missouri, Iowa, Oklahoma, California. Top state in total agricultural sales, no doubt about that, it was California. And the top 10 states in crop sales, again, California. There are a lot of statistics in that census of 2012. You might want to take a look at it. It's kind of interesting. Well, we're out of time for our get-together this week. Thank you, as always, for joining Max Armstrong and yours truly, Orion Samuelson, on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.